Kevin, within the next 5 years, will probably tackle some more challenges that come with, you know, just kind of getting older and becoming a little more mature. I mean, he'll be married in 5 years, or possibly divorced within 5 years, and who knows, maybe he'll be a dad. Maybe I think that would be a pretty fantastic story. I can't imagine Kevin would wouldn't have any hang-ups about, you know, fathering a child considering his upbringing.
Welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast. Today, Luke and I welcome Emmy winner Greg Rickard, who since 2003 has played the role of Kevin Fisher on The Young and the Restless. Recently, Rickard did a shockingly hilarious turn on the hit YouTube sitcom Imaginary Bitches. Greg, welcome.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast because, I'm a big fan of the Fishers family in general, and then to see you on Imaginary Bitches was hilarious. So thank you for taking your time.
Oh yeah, as much as I love playing Kevin, and I do absolutely love playing Kevin, it's always fun to stretch the muscle a little bit and do something that's out of the comfort zone. So that was really fun working with Eden and Andrew and everybody at Imaginary Bitches.
So you're on the number one daytime soap and guest starring on hot web sitcoms. Are you working The Secret or what?
I think that in my own way, I think I've never read The Secret. I think, you know, I do understand what it's about.
No, I was just joking with you.
In my own sort of philosophy is a version of that where it's like, you know, in this business, like there are tons of people who are so willing to put limitations on you and what you can do, and so I try not to buy into that. I figure enough people are going to say no that I sort of feel like what I'm capable of and what I can do is limitless, and if that means I'm going to fall on my face a couple of times, so be it. But, you know, I think if you tell yourself that you can do it, you can. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Especially in an industry like daytime where you do have a lot of people saying, oh, you'll get stereotyped into this and that. It's good you don't let yourself get boxed in.
Oh, that's a load of crap, I think. You know, I think people that think daytime is any sort of trap have never worked in the business and, you know, probably are not too familiar with what it's like to have steady work, work that is, you know, challenging where, you know, we do 200 plus episodes a year. And
wow.
You could be on a primetime series for 7 seasons and never get to do the amount of work we do in just 1 year. So I think daytime is where it's at. I think it's just a great place to be working, and I'm thrilled to be where I am.
On The Young and the Restless, you are part of probably one of the most dysfunctional yet close-knit families, the Fisher-Baldwin clan. What's it like working with Christian LeBlanc, Judith Chapman, Tracy Bregman, and Emily O'Brien?
And let's not forget Ted Shackelford, too, who I guess is
definitely
Bardwell to the Fisher-Baldwin clan. But I think everyone is just fantastic. You know, whenever they sort of add on to the family, and, you know, it was Michael and Kevin, and then Judith came to, you know, Gloria came to the show, and then Tracy became married into the family, and then same thing with Ted and Emily, or, you know, Jenna and Jeff Bardwell. And I think that every time the family grows, it's just another dysfunctional piece of this wonderful puzzle. And I think, you know, if I can be as bold as to say, I think each and every one of us are really talented actors, and I think we always come to work, like, ready to give 150%. And the quirky, dysfunctional factor of what is so integral to our characters, I think, really plays very well on screen, and I'm thrilled that people respond to us well because we have such a good time and we have so much fun doing what we do.
Now, when you joined Young and the Restless, Kevin's initial storyline saw him giving one of the show's teen ingenues a venereal disease and then almost killing the other one.
Yeah,
How did Kevin go from being the most menacing villain on the soap since, well, Michael Baldwin, to the loyal son, boyfriend, and friend?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you should answer that. I don't really know. I mean, I always like to say that on paper, you know, when I first read what Kevin was doing, he was so bad. And this is, like, way before we knew anything of Terrible Tom or Kevin's history. And I had studied with a really great acting teacher named Howard Fine here in L.A. And one of the first things we learn in class is that whatever life you can breathe into the character beyond what's just on the page and beyond what's just beyond what you get to do when the camera is rolling is going to help you so much with regard to that stuff, the stuff that is, you know, seen on air. And I just remember thinking to myself, okay, this guy is, you know, he's doing all these awful things. He's terrible with women. He can't relate to women his own age. You know, so I'm like, there's abuse in his past, and I don't. It certainly wasn't as well, what I had figured out and what I had, you know, decided wasn't as well fleshed out as what the audience came to see in the years that came with, you know, dealing with Terrible Tom and the whole thing with his childhood. But I knew that, like, he had to have a dad who was abusive, and, you know, to both him and the mom, because where, like, that would have been what he saw, and that's why he doesn't understand how to respect women or how to treat a woman properly, because he probably saw this really dysfunctional relationship at home and it was all he knew. And so, you know, I he was really pained, and in my eyes, like, he was doing all these bad things, but he was so broken and in so much pain that, like, you know, that's how I played it. And I think that maybe the fans saw some of that. And I think, you know, instead of him just being this one-dimensional villain, he was somebody who, again, it was, like, so bizarre. He's doing all these awful things, but people kind of felt for him, and they wondered, you know, they were curious about him and wanted to know more about him. So I think, fortunately for me, that meant that my job was going to be, you know, prolonged, and I was going to be part of the show for a while. And I think, you know, I think he certainly reformed a bit. And like you said, he's kind of a loyal son and a good boyfriend and all those things. But let's not forget, you know, your past never fully goes away. And, you know, he may be loyal, a loyal son and all that, but he also still is a Fisher Baldwin. And, you know, I think we are, you know, we tend to be a little unscrupulous.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, a complete transformation, you know?
Well, speaking of the young lady that Kevin so infamously locked in the freezer at Gina's, a while back it looked like there might have been a spark ignited between Kevin and Colleen. Are you upset that they didn't, or that they decided not to go there?
I think, like, I think at the time when it was sort of when they were really flirting with when it seemed like it could be going that way, I think I was excited about it. That being said, it's always nice to know that there's an avenue that, you know, is yet to be explored, and just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it won't. I almost feel like, you know, that would really be that story would really come full circle if that were to happen. I mean, I go from trying to kill her to marrying her hypothetically, you know. But in the interim, I can't say enough how much I absolutely adore Emily and how much I love Kevin and Jenna's relationship. And I think there's a lot of really good stuff coming up with us that'll, you know, that the audience, I think, will really enjoy. I have to say, I think, you know, the two of them together, I think they're such a hoot. And I think that our, you know, what we do on screen, I think, translates really nicely.
Definitely. Well, mentioning avenues that are coming up, Hogan Sheffer recently joined Maria Arena Bell as co-head writer. Any scoop on what's planned for Kevin and the other Fisher Baldwins or Fisher Baldwin Bardwells?
Well, you know, Kevin and John have, I don't know if it aired today. It might be tomorrow's air show. But in light of everything that happened with Sabrina, and, you know, I think Kevin gets really philosophical and sort of wants to seize the moment. So he and Jana fast-track their wedding, and the Bardwell, Baldwin, Fishers take a trip out to Malibu in a couple weeks.
Nice.
And, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that happens. What else can I tease with? Michael's dad is coming back to town. Well, I guess I should say coming to town for the first time. And so, you know, we'll be dealing with all of that, and Kevin and Jana, you know, have some exciting stuff coming up. And, yeah, there's lots of good stuff happening, and I think Maria was doing a fantastic job, and I think I can't even begin to imagine how challenging that job is, you know, writing for 30 some odd actors on a daily basis. So I think having somebody to sort of, you know, share all those duties with, and Hogan is probably going to be even you know, make the show that much better, and I think it's been pretty great.
Well, you mentioned Michael Gross coming on as Michael's long-lost dad. Any right. word on whether or not he'll be quite as psycho as Kevin's dad, or different take entirely?
I think I wouldn't say psycho. I would say 180-degree difference from what Terrible Tom was. And whether or not that means he's a good guy or a bad guy, I think is still yet to be seen. But at least on the surface, seems more palpable than Terrible Tom ever did.
Speaking of Terrible Tom, the storyline where Kevin faced off against him has to be one of the most explosive storylines in recent YNR history. Was it difficult to go there and have to play such a psychologically raw storyline?
Difficult, yeah. You know, really challenging in a good way. I mean, and I mean that in the best sense of those words. It's always, you know, I really enjoy being challenged. I kind of, I like the light, fun stuff that we get to do, but every once in a while I want something, you know, meaty and difficult to sink my teeth into. And that certainly was a big challenge. You know, that material was really heavy. It was not easy to play. Roscoe was, and is a fantastic actor. So I think we did a lot of good work together.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Thanks.
Definitely.
One of my favorite dynamics on the show is Kevin and Daniel's friendship, and best friends. How do you and Michael, or do you and Michael hang out in real life, and are you guys, or are you just great actors together?
Well, you know, if we're doing a work-related event, you know, we spend time together. We had to go up to Canada together recently. But if I'm being totally honest, you know, in our daily lives, unless it's a work-related event, we don't see, I don't see enough of Michael Grazadeh as I would like to in my personal life, but we have a great working relationship, and I think it translates really well. I think that I always, whenever I talk about working with Michael and also with Emily and Adrian Friends, I always go back to one of my favorite storylines in recent memory was the storyline last summer with the dead body and the money, which was taken from Lynn took that story idea from a British film with Ewan McGregor called Shallow Grave, and I love the storyline. I mean, it was summer, it was sort of, you know, serious, but there was a comedic element to it as well. And we would have these scenes, and they would always put us up at the end of the day. And, you know, time is money, especially in soaps where, you know, they want to buy the first take, they want to move on to the next scene. And we would, like, there were days that we would have 7 or 8 scenes to do, and Adrian, Michael Grazadeh, and myself would be like, all right, let's like, run the hell out of these scenes so we can get out there and we can tape our rehearsals and we can, you know, get these scenes done really quickly. And we did. And, like, there was one day we did, like, 8 scenes in like 55 minutes, and we were like, and I think they were pretty good, you know. We were just sort of like, we were so well rehearsed, and we're so sort of in sync with one another, and I think all really clear on what our individual objectives were within the scene. And and I think both of them are just such pros. They're both such good actors, and always come to work like so prepared and so committed, and so yeah, I think our, like, on-screen dynamic, both, you know, with Daniel and Kevin, and also with the three of us, or the four of us, if you want to throw Emily into the mix too, is really kind of unique, special.
Let's talk a little bit about Imaginary Bitches. You gave one of the show's most memorable guest turns, and that's saying something. Was it weird to simulate masturbation in front of Eden Regal?
No. What if I said no? It was totally normal, and it wasn't weird at all. Well, the funny thing is, and have you had Andrew and Eden on the show?
Yes. Okay. We've had Eden twice. Andrew, I've just interviewed for print, but yes, they're hilarious.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Well, what's funny is we have a mutual friend who's a writer who wrote a one-act play, and through Rebecca Budig, who is my next-door neighbor, she and Bob, Rebecca sort of hooked me up with this guy, Michael, who had written this one-act play, and asked if I would participate in it. So I was in this one-act play, Eden was in it, and Andrew was in it as well. And it's basically the story of this writer who's waiting for an important phone call, and he's trying to get some work done, and throughout the course of his day, he just keeps getting interrupted. And at one point, you know, he can't focus on the task at hand. He decides that he's going to take a break, and he goes to a porn website, and he starts masturbating on stage. And so we're in this theater in Culver City, and there's probably like 200 people or so in the audience, one of whom was Barbara Bloom, my boss. And
oh, wow.
I remember thinking, oh, no, my boss is going to be here, and here I have to, like, you know, simulate masturbating on stage. That's going to be a challenge. But anyway, so I had to do it then. And then when, like, a couple months later, Andrew had written Imaginary Bitches, said, hey, I have the perfect role for you. And I read the script, and I remember emailing him back saying, are we ever going to work together where, you know, somehow my penis isn't prominently, like, featured? And so he got a kick out of that. And I think, you know, I mean, I guess it is what it is. It wasn't weird. I mean, it wasn't. I would have been really weird had I, you know, really been masturbating. But it was all.
So you're not a method actor then.
Not a method actor. No, certainly not when it comes to that. But no, it wasn't weird. It was so much fun. And those guys are great. I hope that they get to do. You know, many, many more episodes of Imaginary Bitches, and I hope they invite me back. Although that would be a challenge. I think that would really, you know, we talk about how it's fun to be challenged. I think it would be difficult for Andrew to figure out how to bring back the masturbating awful date back to into the story.
Well, I read in your bio that you graduated from honors, or with honors, from Pennsylvania's Villanova University and did an internship on Capitol Hill. What made you decide to forgo a career in politics for acting?
Well, I think that, I mean, politics is something I've always been passionate about. I still am. I just think that, you know, I mean, it was a really nice experience working on Capitol Hill, something I really enjoyed, but it wasn't, I don't know, maybe just at this stage of the game, it wasn't, you know, my only interest. So, who knows, maybe some point later in life, it's something I'll go back to. I mean, I still... You know, I attend fundraisers, and you know, I get behind causes and issues that I'm passionate about. But acting, I think, is something that is more fulfilling, I'd say, and something I enjoy more. So I'd like to do it as long as they let me.
Where do you see Greg Rickhardt in 5 years?
Good question. Hopefully. Still doing what I'm doing, whether it's on Y&R or, you know, getting paid to work as an actor, I hope, is what I see myself doing in 5 years. And just outside of work, just enjoying the same things that I enjoy now. And let's see, 5 years from now, hopefully we'll be celebrating President Obama's second term, right? That's a good, that would be something that would be happening in just about 5 years, right?
Woohoo.
Yeah, that would be the right time frame.
Right. And what else? Yeah, I mean, you know, outside of work, I love to travel and cook and, you know, I just I enjoy life very much. And I hope that 5 years from now, and I hope and expect that I still will be doing all those things.
Now comes the hard part. Where do you see Kevin Fischer in 5 years?
Kevin in 5 years. Well... That is a harder question. I guess I'm really at the discretion of our writers, but I think Kevin within the next 5 years will probably tackle some more challenges that come with, you know, just kind of getting older and becoming a little more mature. I mean, he'll be married in 5 years, or possibly divorced within 5 years, and who knows? Maybe he'll be a dad. Maybe I think that would be a pretty fantastic story. I can't imagine Kevin wouldn't have any hang-ups about, you know, fathering a child, considering his upbringing. I'm sure that would bring up a lot of, you know, scary memories and fears about what kind of dad he would be. But that's something I would love to play. Hopefully Kevin will be a dad within 5 years. And, you know, just dealing with the crazy family and the hijinks that more of the same, I guess, with regard to the Fisher Baldwins.
I have to ask, because you mentioned cooking, is there any chance that you might be making a guest appearance on your next-door neighbor in Eden's cooking show?
Oh, I would. You know, it's funny. Bob and I were just in, where were we? We were in Kenosha for this event, and I didn't even know he was doing a cooking show with Eden until he told me about it. And yeah, I would love to. I would love to, you know, show up on that anytime. Anytime they want me, I'll be available.
Greg, we thank you so much for coming out with us today. We know you're a busy man, what with all of your many roles you're playing. We're not going to keep you too long, but we just wanted to thank you so much for joining us tonight on Daytime Confidential. And
well, thanks again for having me, and I hope everybody that's listening enjoys what's coming up with the Fisher Baldwins, as well as what's coming up with Imaginary Bitches. Lots of good, entertaining stuff in the future.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, well, let me... I got one more piggyback question here. We recently had Elizabeth Hendrickson on with Eden for Eden's second time on the show. Any chance we'll be seeing you mix it up with Chloe?
Well, I have to say she's Kevin. One of my favorite characters on the show right now. I think that she's so good at being so bad, you know? And I read an interview that she did, and it was either in Soap Digest or in Soaps in Depth, and they had asked her, you know, who she'd like to, you know, play around with on the show, and she said... I think her exact quote was something along the lines of the Fisher Baldwins seem like Chloe's kind of people, which I have to say, I think she'd fit perfectly into our mix. So, I mean, it's funny, because, you know, I know Lizzie through Eden and Andrew and Rebecca and Bob as well, and short of maybe just like a couple of lines in passing, she and I haven't really had any screen time together, so I would love to work with her. I think she's great, and she's doing such a great job with that role. Although I can tease this, Kevin shows up as the surprise guest at Jana's bachelorette party, and Chloe's there. But again, we sort of just see each other in passing.
Nice. Well, finally, I just want to ask for your fans, where is the last place on Earth that they would ever expect to find you?
Well, it being sort of, you know, the political season right now with, I would say the last place they could ever expect to find me is at a John McCain fundraiser.
Well, we thank you so much for taking your time today and joining us on the podcast. It's been
thank
a pleasure
you
visiting with you.
It's been a hoot. I hope you guys had fun, too, and we'll have to do it again
definitely.
Sometime.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Come back. We'd love to have
thanks,
you.
Thanks. I'll come back anytime. Anytime you guys want to do this again, we'll have at it.
Well, cool.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck.
All right. Thanks. Same to you guys, and until next time.
Yes.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.